I'm Jim Burke, and I'm the host for this second of three housing forums, and it's about inclusionary zoning myths. And our panelists here today are Judith Alexander, who moved to Port Townsend in 1979. She is a self-employed clinical social worker in private practice as a therapist, and she worked with others to found Local 2020 back in 2006, initially focusing on our food system development and on neighborhood emergency preparedness, more recently through her association with Housing Solutions Network. She's been primarily engaged in the community build efforts to build tiny temporary shelters for those who lack secure housing. Kim Herman, he was director of the Washington State Housing Finance Commission for 35 years, and before that held a series of jobs related to developing affordable housing and providing technical assistance to nonprofit and public housing developers in the western states. He also worked state and national legislation to promote affordable housing. And last but not least, Fred Kimball is our third panelist, and he has been a resident of PT for 37 years. He has a background in mining and geological engineering. Wow. Retired several years ago after being a cabinet maker and building contractor in Port Townsend for 30 years. He's been active with Habitat here for 22 years as a volunteer, board member, board president, and currently working with them on some of their next projects. With his work through Habitat and having employees, he's watched some of his team try to find affordable housing, and it was an agonizing process. Workforce housing is such a vital part of the housing spectrum to keep the vibrant community that we all love. Wow. Talking to some heavy hitters here. What is inclusionary zoning? Anybody want to start?
Yeah. inclusionary zoning is where a local community requires that in their zoning areas, if a builder wants to build market rate housing, that they have to include a certain number of affordable housing units in the new constructions that is taking place in order to meet needs of certain community members of low and moderate income. And so that's inclusionary zoning in a general, very general statement. Basically tied to certain income levels, like below 80% of median, or maybe if you're talking about middle income housing, below 120 or 150% of median.
Okay. Anyone else want to chime in on what they think inclusionary zoning is or isn't?
I have a question.
Sure.
My question for you, Kim, is what I'm hearing about the state we're in right now is that the cost of building is so high that building housing that goes at affordable rates for lower income people, they say, doesn't pencil out. I'm hoping that that's a myth, but I would like your comment on that.
Well, there are a lot of programs through the state and federal governments which provide money which doesn't have to be paid back for the development of affordable housing. And so consequently, if you're talking to someone who only is borrowing from a bank or another, you know, lender, and they have to make all those payments based on the total cost of the project and plus make a profit over time, yeah, you know, doing affordable housing might not be the best investment. But if you're a nonprofit or even a for-profit developer who's doing affordable housing, there are programs that you can participate in through the federal government or the state government, which will subsidize a portion of that project in such a way that you can still make your profit, but you can either sell or rent those units to people under certain income guidelines.
Would it also be safe to say that if you were to develop a project, say an apartment building, and you were either a city government or county government or a non-governmental organization, that once you had the plan in place and you had certain inclusionary aspects to it, that you could find, that you could reach out to the government, the federal, the state government, for grants and other private foundations for money to come in to help fund that?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, usually you would go through the process of looking at those sources in advance so that you know that you can build them.
That's what I was thinking.
But then
instead of doing all the work, not getting anything to show for it.
But then
I'm new to all of this.
Yeah, no, I understand. But the other thing you have to realize also that I didn't mention, for example, the Peninsula Housing Authority they provide rental credits to people in Port Townsend and Jefferson County, where they pay a portion of the rent for people who are very low income.
That's mm-hmm. subsidized housing, Section 8 and that kind of
thing. Not necessarily. They don't have any subsidized. The Housing Authority doesn't own any units in Port Townsend. Okay. But what they do is they provide rental vouchers. Mm-hmm. So the landlord still gets his full rent, but the person that is living there may only pay 30% of their current income, and the Housing Authority pays the balance to meet the rent requirement.
There's other other mechanisms, too. Here in Port Townsend or Jefferson County, we have the Olympic Land Trust, their projects are going to hold the land in trust and lease at a dollar a year for 99 years, mm-hmm. renewable.
So that the land doesn't have to be part of the equation.
Withdraw the land, the most expensive part of a building project, uh-huh. out of the equation and becomes permanently affordable that way.
Right.
Habitat is starting to do that model on their projects, so they retain permanent affordability. And there's also deed restrictions that you can apply to ownership models that will restrict sort of equity growth and costs so that it becomes permanently affordable into the future. And that's really where we've got to go with this affordable housing is somehow or another protect the folks that are going to need that housing.
Right. For years and decades to come. Workforce housing.
Permanently affordable.
Right, permanently affordable. And we're starting actually to answer the second question on the list here, which is how does inclusionary zoning work?
Inclusionary zoning works by requiring developers or builders of multiple unit projects to have a number of units that are set aside for affordable units. And whether that's a ratio, whether it's out of every four, two out of every six.
It says here on this little cheat sheet of mine, this percentage is usually dictated by the area median income, which at this time, what is the area median income, Kim, right now?
It's about $79,300 for Jefferson County, I believe, is what the HUD $73,900, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that for an individual person?
That's for all the households in the community
I think the important part of that, too, is that typically the HUD and these governmental agencies like to see that no more than 30% of your income goes towards housing.
Right.
So out of that $70,000, you have $21,000. Or 20-something thousand dollars that you can afford to pay towards
rent or mortgage.
So that's
rent,
less than $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
So what they're meaning by this, what you just read, is the fact that a community can decide that they want to have housing for people below 80% of median, which in Washington is considered low income, or they might say, okay, we have some middle income workers that still need housing, which is the case in Port Townsend. Mm-hmm. People who are making maybe as high as 120% of median or 150%.
Yeah. And speaking with Liz Rabord yesterday about the Housing Solutions Network, it sounds like it came about because in 2018 there was a housing emergency declared.
Right.
Hmm. Was that declared in the county, or the city?
It's county.
In the county.
The city didn't address the housing emergency, and I couldn't tell you how it overlays
You're not even sure they're addressing it now?
The city.
They're getting on board, but.
They're getting on
the
board.
City, the reason why we're having this conversation is because the inclusionary zoning and looking at the zoning rules for the city of Port Townsend.
Right. Most recently, they've been talking about ADUs and infill.
Just to answer your question, the comprehensive plan that the city wrote in 2018 and adopted had a Chapter 5. It's all about their housing element. And they have an affordable housing strategy in that comprehensive plan that had about 12 or 14 goals. And I'd have to say the city, there was a shift in the administration of the city. That plan was not undertaken or developed. It wasn't carried out.
So there was a plan, but nobody used the plan to do anything with it.
Right.
Yeah. I think the housing crisis or emergency, correct me, Fred, if this is different than what you think, but what I learned was that in a regular city, there's usually 5% of the rental housing is available for rent. and we had less than 1% available here, so you couldn't even find a place to rent. It's you forget about the cost of it. Yeah. They weren't on the market.
I understand.
So that's what created the distinction of we're in a crisis.
Okay.
At least part of it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, there's multi facets to this crisis. I'm learning more every day about it.
Yeah.
So how many places have used inclusionary zoning?
Well, yeah, there was a study by Housing and Health and an article written in 2018. Almost 1,400 jurisdictions in 24 states have used inclusionary zoning in the United States, and that has produced over 170,000 units of affordable housing as a result of inclusionary zoning requirements.
Wow!
So it's about 2/3 of those 170,000 units were rental and the rest were ownership. But it's a primary way that major jurisdictions get affordable housing into them. Seattle, for example, has an inclusionary zoning program, or they also offer the in lieu of fee, which a developer can pay, which is then given to nonprofits to develop affordable housing.
They can buy their way out of having to do inclusionary housing?
Yeah, yes. that doesn't work in a scale of our size.
Yeah, that's kind of like a carbon credit or something, isn't
kind
it?
Kind of, yeah. In a city like Seattle,
you're going to create... A license to pollute.
Yeah, you're going to create lots of credits.
I don't like that idea.
In this town, you won't create very many credits.
Yeah. Right,
it's just an easy way to get around the rule.
The other day, or last week, we were talking about the number of units needed, and Peggy Herman had a...
Peggy Webster.
I'm sorry. Totally different person. You're absolutely right. Peggy Webster said that there was a need for 3,100 units of housing here.
Fred has the number.
Thank you, Fred.
The Washington Department of Commerce just came out with a report that projected the housing needs for the next 20 years by county. So, you know, you'd have to parse sort of what the city would require. But Jefferson County needs 3,985 units in the next 20 years, which amounts to...
Almost 4,000 units.
4,000 units, which is 200 units a year of different types of housing. Some of it's supportive housing, but in the 30 to 120 plus, it amounts to about 36 units a year need to be built in this town over the next 20 years. So where's all that going to be built at, and how are we going to get
At the rate we're going, we're not going to keep up. I mean, how many units are in Seventh Haven?
43.
And that's a lot of that is supportive, and it's not necessarily workforce housing.
Right. And then there's Evans Vista, which is still being drawn up.
Evans Vista is supposed to... Everything that's been written about Evans Vista that the city has purported, Evans Vista, including the rationale they gave for getting the $3.1 million from the Department of Commerce, is that they're going to do up to 50 units for people earning less than 80% of median income, and up to 100 units for persons earning less than 120% of median in Evans Vista.
Okay.
And that'll be part of the whole development of the 8 acres that gets developed.
Fred, do you have any idea how long it would take them from now? Like, when do you think that Evans Vista would be done?
Well, I think the schedule, you know, they've just engaged the design firm, and they'll be coming up with a conceptual idea for their Evans Vista project, I think, by the end of the year. And then it's finding financing, getting the infrastructure put in. So you're, at best... 5 years out?
5 years out, okay.
To completion?
It also depends on how they build them, because there's, for example, they could do self-help housing through the Peninsula Housing Authority, where people help build their own homes to cut down on the cost, but they could still become owners.
Right.
You know, it might take a group of 10 people 9 or 12 months to build those units.
And there's also Port Hadlock, the...
Mason Street Habitat Project. Yeah, and that's going to be all land trust.
Right.
That's all permanently affordable.
Right.
And, you know, we hope that Evans Vista goes that way.
And I want to chime in. I'm part of the Community Build leadership team.
Yep.
And we've
Okay. This is KPTZ, 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. This is Jim Burke. We're on the second Housing Forum of three. I'm here with Kim Herman, Judy Alexander, and Fred Kimball. And we're talking about inclusionary zoning myths. Thank you, Fred.
So the Community Builds mission is to build secure shelters for temporary emergency housing for virtually homeless people.
Right.
And
unsheltered people.
We have built probably about 36 in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But the problem is they're only 8 feet by 12 feet big, and right. they have no kitchens or baths. So we right. built 36, but they're not the right kind of 36.
The Department of Commerce says that in 20 years we need 556 emergency housing.
In the county.
In the county. Right.
Yeah. Well, Community Build is at a pivot point. We want to build small, actual, real houses if we can. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a little bit with Olympic Housing Trust about whether we can get involved in their first project, which happens to be on land by my community garden. Mm-hmm. And what we were told by, I think it was Greg Brotherton, Steve Theringer, that because there's state or federal money involved in that you have to pay prevailing wages, and so us as volunteers might not be able to help.
Are there people who would be building it, you mean?
Yeah, we want to help build. We are volunteers. We have 100 people or more, 300, right. I think, on our volunteer list,
yeah.
who are eager to build housing, eager to create solutions.
But in order to get federal money, you have to be creating jobs. For working people.
Prevailing wages, which is not just $15 an hour. It's like what plumbers normally get or construction builders. So, but we're interested. And so, one idea we're kicking around is whether, and I don't even know if this is possible, but we have a couple of churches that have land that are willing to put housing on their land, maybe taking the cost of the land out of the deal, maybe involving Habitat. And if we also could build, then take out the labor cost, the land cost, there could be...
The next question on the list, are you ready?
Yeah.
As panelists, are you ready? Are there alternatives to inclusionary zoning?
Well, we talked about one of them, which is the idea of in-lieu fees. If you're going to have inclusionary zoning, the developer can do that, make a payment, which is then used to provide affordable housing or temporary housing. That works in the bigger cities. It probably is not going to work as well in Port Townsend, just because you're not going to collect enough money to make a difference. And so that one is probably out. And there probably aren't as many options other than the ones that Fred has mentioned, using land trusts, using
deed
restrictions and things like that, where anything that gets built is going to be permanently affordable, so that it doesn't, the affordability doesn't expire in 40 years or 50 years. It stays permanent forever. That's a way to keep the affordability permanent, is by using those kinds of restrictions and land trusts and stuff, so that it doesn't expire at some future point.
Right.
I think it's important to point out that with the land trust model, that since you don't own the land, but you could still sell that house, and built into your agreement with the land trust is an equity share, so that as the real estate market goes up, you as a homeowner get some of that equity back. Mm-hmm. It's not like you do normally if you own the land and everything, you get the real estate equity.
Right.
Well, you get the same deal, but you just don't own the land.
And I don't think the profit is not like if it was market rate housing.
It's controlled.
It's definitely limited, so it can stay permanently affordable.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I have a solution that's probably not really talked about that much.
No, please.
I would like a major revamp of our ethics. Is it true, Fred, that 25% of our housing is functionally empty because they are second homes?
It's that order of magnitude.
That is so egregious to me. It's like we have people who are literally living in tents, and we have houses that could house people, and they're not allowed in.
I know.
I mean, to sort of draw a parallel to that as an anecdote, I've built houses here for the last 30-some-odd years, and I don't know how many I've built. It's in the order of magnitude of 60 or 70 or something like that. Uh-huh. And out of those 60 or 70 houses, I built two houses for people with kids at home. One of those was mine.
Right.
And out of all
and
those,
all the rest were for second homes?
Retirees. Yeah. Or, you know, people. And out of those houses, 60 or 70 houses, probably two-thirds of them were paid for with cash.
Mm-hmm. That's the other thing that's happening is houses that go on the market. If you're a first-time home buyer, you have to go to a bank to get a loan, and someone comes from Seattle or New York City or Los Angeles, and they can pay sometimes upwards of $100,000 over the asking price in cash, and people have no chance of getting into a first home.
Right.
I just think I don't know. It might be like an animal of mass extinction or something like that, but I just feel
late stage capitalism.
I feel so offended by that.
Well, I understand. The only thing I'm wondering about is, and it, since you're mentioning it, is that it seems like it's a nationwide problem and maybe even a Western civilization problem, because Naushad Carter, who was here last week, he said that, you know, they're having the same kinds of market pressures and housing issues in Europe.
Right.
So it's like everywhere. And now there's all this displacement because some people are leaving other states because of very catastrophic weather events that keep occurring.
Right.
I wish I knew what to do about that. I wish people could be educated to that, or that people could be, maybe they could grow their hearts two sizes bigger, like the Grinch, and just start to open their purses.
If the city were to have to increase fees for building permits, development permits, folks that are moving here need to understand why. And that's one of the reasons, is to help the city administer or develop affordable housing units. I mean, one of the more expensive things about trying to build here in Port Townsend is infrastructure.
Right.
You can buy a piece of land, but having to put in a street or run sewer line,
sidewalks,
or run water lines, sidewalks that go from no place to nowhere.
I was driving by one on Hastings yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's a beautiful, piece of sidewalk.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the Community Land Trust housing. That's why that sidewalk is going in, if you're talking.
The thing is, I noticed that the one that's beautiful there is being extended, and that's good that it's being extended towards town. Yeah. I mean, maybe it'll reach Discovery Road by, you know, the end of the decade. I don't know.
So here's something that I can speak to from my profession. As a clinical social worker, I've noticed with the volunteers with Community Build that they come in thinking that they're going to help build housing for people that don't have housing. But what we're finding is that people's hearts are changing because they're getting up close and personal with some of the people that need that housing. Mm-hmm. And they're getting aware of how good it feels to volunteer. And I would propose that the same thing could be true for people that are comfortable with their wealth but not connected to the community, that they would feel so good if they recognized ways they could give. It would help them feel better about life in general. And I think that that's the educational piece that I would like to promote, is that compassion building is a huge value of mine.
I think a lot of the people who actually come here to retire or have entered the second chapter of their life, a lot of them have started to branch out and volunteer. So I think a lot of that happens organically because people are like, well, what do I do now? My kids are out of college. What do I do now? Fred, you have something. I can tell there's something on the tip of your tongue.
There might have been.
That's what happens when Jim speaks up. Let me just ask these last two questions and then we can continue with our freeform discussion. What are the benefits of inclusionary zoning?
Well, first of all, most importantly, there's an increase in the supply of affordable housing.
Right.
Because that's the primary thing. It gives an opportunity for low and moderate income families to live in that affordable housing, which is not available at the current time. Mm-hmm. Studies have shown that there are decreased racial and economic segregations in communities that are caused by high housing costs.
Right.
And also, the health of the people in the communities is better. Because of the fact that they're living in affordable housing. They're not stressed about the cost of housing. They just have better mental health. So those are some of the that have been shown by studies where you've got inclusionary zoning.
One of the benefits.
Not to mention that your plumbers, electricians, carpenters, nurses, et cetera, are not driving from Paulsville.
Right.
Not driving from Port Angeles.
Yeah. I was going to comment on the traffic jam we now have coming into and leaving town. We never used to have that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But people have to live in Kitsap County.
Well, wait until this summer when they close the bridge for 4 weekends in a row.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
I know. So are there potential limitations to the use of inclusionary housing?
Yeah.
Inclusionary zoning? Wow.
One of the things which probably doesn't hold here in Port Townsend, but in the larger communities, if you're tearing down older housing, which doesn't cost as much to build new housing, and only part of that new housing is included in inclusionary zoning, you might actually lose some of the affordable housing. And that's more of a big city thing. That's not Port Townsend.
Yeah.
It may discourage multifamily housing development if there are other places that for-profit developers can build multifamily housing where there isn't inclusionary zoning required. They can go to one place and not have to deal with it. That might, you know, be a little bit here. And then also, it just depends on the need. We know there's a need for affordable housing in Port Townsend. If there was no need, then maybe there isn't any need for inclusionary zoning.
Right.
But there's a need here. And
well, there is a serious need here. That's clear.
Yeah. It's not going away.
No. And we're running out of time, but I guess I just have... Why don't we just go one at a time? Judy, why don't you give us your closing remarks?
Well, we've just talked recently about getting newcomers involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on a project right now called a Connectivity Fair. And it's a nonprofit fair that's going to be happening at Blue Heron School on April 16th. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a whole bunch of nonprofits in the gymnasium. So all the newcomers that want to get involved in helping our nonprofit communities can show up for that. And they can make some friends and do some good work.
What's the date on that again?
April 16th is a Sunday afternoon.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Kim?
Well, I think the most important thing about inclusionary zoning and affordable housing is it's your mail carrier, it's your waitress, you know, it's your person. The hospital had 70 vacant positions they were trying to fill when I got here 3 weeks ago. They've hired 5 since then. Their biggest problem is people can't find a place that they can afford to live. Mm. So it could be a direct problem in your health care if we don't solve the affordable housing problem.
It already is. It already is. People have to wait really long time
and
to get
into it. And it's the maritime industry. They bought a hotel locally.
Yeah, I know. The Swan Hotel. Fred, what do you got?
You know, I think right now is a critical time. I mean, there's Planning Commission meeting tonight
at
City Council or at City Hall about the rezoning that they've been talking about, that people need to show up and at least listen and understand what's happening.
Right.
And as we go through that, that process is going to come to some kind of a wind-down point in the beginning of April. But Evans Vista, the stakeholder meetings and the discussion about what the community wants with, done about Evans Vista is going to be ongoing here this spring and into the summer. And I think, you know, the population needs to turn out and put their hands in the air about what they want to see in this community.
Super.
And you said yourself, Jim, that it's complicated. I've been at this housing stuff for 3 or 4 years, and I'm still learning stuff all the time.
Yeah.
You have to get involved to understand how complex the problems are.
I've been doing it for 20-plus with Habitat.
So, Fred, you mentioned this city planning meeting. That's March 9th. Okay, so this is being recorded on March 9th. I'm just pointing that out.
Well,
it's not live radio. It's being recorded, but it will be aired on the 13th and also again on the 14th.
Well, and it's important to pay attention to upcoming meetings.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The final decision won't be made till April 1st, so people can still get involved.
I understand. Fred Kimball, Kim Herman, Judy Alexander,
thank you
all for being here today. Thank you for putting up with my naivete.
We're in this
Happy
with you.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Jim.
This is Jim Burke. Thanks a lot.